it seems like for Black people, we are always at the short end of the stick no matter what we do.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm Natasha S. Alford.
And I'm your co-host, Jaron Keith Gaynor. This week, we are asking, Dear Culture, where should our priorities lie? Money or the well-being of the most vulnerable among us?
In the midst of coronavirus cases surging, states like Georgia and Indiana are taking steps to reopen. And we're noticing a tale of two Americas, one where vulnerable populations like racial minorities, the elderly, and the poor are facing the brunt of suffering. And it appears some people might not really care.
In Michigan, overall, African Americans make up 40% of COVID deaths. That's despite only being 14% or so of the population.
72% of all people who died from COVID-19 in Chicago are African American.
In New York City, Hispanics make up 34% of all COVID-19 deaths.
The economic toll of the pandemic is being felt all over the country. Small businesses and major retailers alike are struggling, like J. Crew, which just filed for bankruptcy this week with others likely to follow. At the same time, demonstrations are popping up across the country with protesters demanding for businesses to reopen, like this one in Indiana.
Let us work! Let us work! Let us work! Let us work! No more tyranny! No more tyranny!
And on a lighter note, on this episode of Dear Culture, we speak with a boss woman in radio who holds it down for women in hip hop and also holds it down with her businesses in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic.
Produced by Power 105 in New York and syndicated all around the country.
From the nationally syndicated radio show, The Breakfast Club on Power 105.1 in New York City, DJ Envy, Angela Yee, and Charlamagne the God.
They even have the nickname, the world's most dangerous morning show.
So our guest today is the perfect person to talk to at a time like this. Not only is she something of a New York legend, but she's a music industry veteran. She's managed artists like Jay Electronica. And you may know her as one third of the nationally syndicated morning radio show, The Breakfast Club. Of course, we're talking about Angela Yee. Welcome to Dear Culture, Angela.
Welcome.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here.
So good to have you. How are you coping in the coronavirus while quarantined in Brooklyn?
Well, I'm trying to do my best. You know, I do live by myself. So my makeup artist who works with me on Revolt, she lives downstairs with me. So me and her, we've been seeing each other pretty frequently. I have a juice bar that's a few blocks away. So I've been walking over there, checking on things. I was just there yesterday, giving out some face masks for people. And so I've been trying to make sure that I go outside, but in as safe a manner as possible, because I do think it's also important to make sure that you get some fresh air and see some sunlight. And so I've been conscious of those things. I've also been conscious of what I've been eating, because I know normally I move around so much during the day. So because I'm not doing as much, and a lot of times I'm sitting here in one position for hours, like doing my morning show and then, you know, doing interviews and then having meetings. So I've been really conscious of like making sure that I juice every single day. I have a juice and making sure I stay just healthy, because as we've seen with coronavirus, you know, it is important to make sure that our immune system is strong.
You know, it's interesting, Angela, you talk about the juice business, and you are a business owner, and we've been covering how Black businesses have been going through a lot during the pandemic because, you know, a lot of us have businesses where we interact with customers face to face. How is your business holding up? Have you been able to get any support? You know, what is it like being a business owner at this time?
Well, I do want to say at this point, I'm really grateful for all the staff that has been coming to work right now during this time. And our business has actually been doing well because it is a juice bar. So I think people right now are really conscious of their health. So we've been open this whole time.
So along the lines of the pandemic, obviously you're a Black woman, but you're also biracial. Your dad is Chinese. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a rise in xenophobia against Asian Americans. We've even heard the president call the virus a Chinese virus. As an Asian American woman, what is your thoughts about the racism targeted against the community?
You know, it's interesting because I did grow up in Flatbush. And like you said, I'm a Black woman, but I am biracial. And, you know, I think that what I see a lot of is people saying, well, African Americans have been targeted all this time, so what, who cares? And I think I'm sensitive to it from both ends, you know, because I've seen Asian people be really racist against Black people, and we see what's happening in China with that. But then I also now see it the other way around, and I don't believe in attacking anybody because of the basis of what their, you know, culture is, or because of the color of their skin, or because of their appearance. I don't believe in that at all. You know, I don't believe in attacking people because they're, you know, because of their religion. I don't believe in any of those things. And so it's just been really difficult because it's so much hate. And I don't like to see that. I don't like to see people be like, well, I don't care if that person gets attacked because we've been getting attacked. We should care about people and human beings in general and not want to see that happen to anyone. And I think we live in such a divisive, you know, country right now because our president has set the tone. And we can even see Donald Trump has, in a way, it encourages people, like just even him talking about people who are protesting, right, with Confederate flags and saying that they're good people, you know, things like that are so harmful and hurtful to our communities. And so I would rather for people to support each other than to say, too bad, this happens to us, or, you know, too bad for that person. I hate that.
Yeah, I feel that as somebody who's multi-ethnic as well, because it's like you understand how one group may feel, but they're talking about people who are like your aunts, your cousins, you know, your mother, your father. You feel that it's a little bit more personal when people forget the human side of it. We're interested in your experience just in the business. Like, how have you had such longevity, and how have you asserted yourself as a woman in an industry that is so male dominated? I think there's something really special about the fact that you've been able to do that for so long.
Well, it hasn't been easy. And you can see a lot of things coming out now as people are feeling more empowered to speak up about things before that they would have felt had to be repressed or would have gotten no recognition. So that is important. And the time is so different. When I first started in radio in particular, that was about 16 years ago. And it was a different time. Again, I was the first woman on the whole station when I got hired at Shade 45. And I remember getting hired and being told, you just can't be sensitive, okay? Like, you can't get mad about things. People are gonna make jokes that you won't like. And if you're sensitive, you won't last in this business. And it sucks, but I do believe that, fortunately for me, when I first started doing radio, it wasn't social media the way that it is today. So I was allowed to have some leeway to make some mistakes and get better and build myself up. And the other thing I would say is that I can appreciate now that men are being held accountable for things that they say and do, and ways that they can prohibit women from getting into position, ways that they can make us feel uncomfortable. And that has been pretty amazing to see. And I feel like so many different stories are coming out, but there's still so much misogyny. There's still so many people you'll see that will blame the women for certain things and say, well, if she agreed to do this because she was offered the job or the promotion, isn't that her fault? Well, you shouldn't even be put in that position to have to figure out if you have to make this decision. That should never happen. I don't want women to be afraid to come forward and say what happened to them. If things happen, I feel like sometimes men don't look at coercion as a type of, or being aggressive, they don't look at it in the same way that we might look at it. And I also do feel like sometimes as women, we get pressured into things that we feel like we don't have a choice at the time. And then you try to tell your story and it's like, people would tell you, well, you didn't have to do that. Well, you shouldn't have been there. Well,
right. You had a choice, basically.
Right.
Right.
And sometimes in the moment, it doesn't feel like that. There's times when people just have a different account of the same story. So it's just a difficult thing. And no matter what, like, people are going to attack you either way. If you express your opinion, they'll be mad if you side with the woman. They'll be mad if you side with the man. And the truth is, we as an audience, I don't really know what happened.
You know, you're an expert in the field of media and music. You have a lot of history in music, as we talked about before. The Me Too movement has hit film. It's hit politics. And obviously with this new documentary, it's now hitting the music industry. Do you think the music industry is prepared for the Me Too movement? Because it is still male dominated, as we've said.
I don't even think the film industry was prepared for it. I think this is not something that people anticipated. But it's like, moving forward, now y'all know what you can't do. Because you have to be thinking, you might get away with this today, you might get away with this for 5 years, 10 years, but even if it's 30 years from now, like with the Harvey Weinstein, it will come back to you and you will pay for it. And so I do like to see when people have done these terrible things and affected people's lives and careers and their mental state, and they are now being held accountable. And so I hope that this makes people think, if I was about to do something, let me think twice, because I see what happened to this person, or I see this person, I see the retribution there. And I hope that it makes women feel more empowered also.
The flip side of it is that you have created space to have healthy conversations about sex, to have healthy conversations about relationships through lip service. And so, first of all, shout out to your podcast.
Love it.
Thank you.
What was the origin story of that podcast and how you built it? Start us off right there.
Well, when I was at Sirius, I had a segment on the morning show when I was on with Cypher Sounds. And like I said, I was the only woman on that station for a long time. And so it was kind of a way to show what women really talk about and how we really think. So you don't just think that we're these like super innocent creatures that never talk about sex. Because I know me and my friends, our conversations can get a little filthy. And so I had this segment. It was called Slut It Out.
Oh.
And it was once a week. Yeah.
I love it.
My goodness.
But it was kind of a joke. You know, the title was just more, all right, say what you want. Let's get you slutted out during this time. And it was fun. And it would be just regular, everyday women. It was a receptionist that would come in one time, a doctor, just different people talking about sex, different women. And so for a lot of guys, it was really educational. It was fun for them to listen to it. And for a lot of women, it was relatable because there was nowhere that they could hear these conversations in a non-judgmental environment. So that's really how it started out. The segment did so well in the morning show that they ended up giving me my own nighttime show. They came on once a week and we changed the name to Lip Service. And I started it off with Leah Rose, and she was the music editor at XXL at the time. So it was a very great space because it's intelligent conversation, but it's also sometimes just fun conversation. It's educational about sex, but it was also a space where when we have a man as a guest, he would be the only guy in the room. And that was so rare at that time in hip hop to have a show where the man was in the minority and they would be either uncomfortable or in heaven, just depending on how comfortable they were with themselves. And so it was just a fun thing that I did. And then I remember Nicki Minaj came up to the Breakfast Club and she was like, you used to be fun. You had that show, Lip Service. What happened to that? And I was like, you're right. Let me bring it back as a podcast.
Nice.
Do you feel like as a media personality, there's an extra pressure on you to present a certain way in terms of like your personal life or, you know, the kind of being able to even talk about sex as a woman? Sometimes we're trying to like stop being sexualized as media people, but then you're like, you know what? I need the freedom to talk too. Like, did you ever deal with, you know, kind of being torn about it?
Yeah, I've had people say to me, oh, well, you do a show called Lip Service, but that doesn't mean that, first of all, I'm not disrespectful to anybody on there. So I think there's certain lines being drawn. Like, I feel like, I think it's intention. You know, is your intention to be disrespectful and rude, or is your intention not bad and it's just funny or familiar? I think that's what really plays a large role in that to me. And I think it's interesting because people used to be like, oh, you'll never be Oprah. And I'm like, guys, like, just because of, you know, the topics on there. And I love Oprah and what she's done, but I'm not trying to be Oprah. Like, I've never said I wanted to be somebody else. And I also feel like as a Black woman, you can't, like, look, Chelsea Handler had a whole very successful show, career, stand-up comedy, talking about sex as an author, all of those things. And I do feel like Black women, they don't give you that leeway to be able to do that. For some reason, it's, oh my God, that's disgusting. But, you know, if you're, we can't, this is nasty, what's wrong with you, you're whatever. But for some reason, for white women, I think it's more acceptable for them to be able to have those conversations.
Well, I watched the old interview where you talked about growing up listening to Angie Martinez and Wendy Williams. And I think that you're this generation's premier woman in radio for the culture.
Yeah.
And so I want to ask you, how does it feel to be in a position of power like that and being a role model for a lot of young women in media who want to do what you do someday?
I think, you know, first of all, I've never really looked at myself like that. So, because I still work with Angie, so that's amazing to me. Like, sometimes it's surreal. We'll be out at dinner having drinks. I'm like, look at me having drinks with Angie Martinez.
So cool.
So
that's how I feel when I'm with you, Angela, by the way, whenever we're together.
Stop it. No, you don't.
I do.
I think that is important, you know, just because I do feel a responsibility when people want to talk to me about things, you know, no matter what, I feel like great that people who know me personally can vouch for me. And that's important to me because sometimes people have this perception of you, or there's people who just are determined to not like you and it is what it is. Like, you can't try to convince people I'm actually a good person. Like, if they don't want to believe that, that's on them. But I do feel comfortable and content knowing that people who know me personally will have positive things to say for me. I would say like about 98% of people would say, no, Angela actually behind the scenes does do a lot of things. And I also think, Jaren, that as women, sometimes we don't prop ourselves up. A lot of times we don't talk about our own accomplishments or things that we've done. Like, you'll never hear me brag about what I've done for the next person, or say, oh, I did this, or I put this person on, or I never do that, or I donated this. Like, I just kind of do stuff and just keep it low key and chill. And I think we are taught as women to be more humble than men are. I think men a lot of times will tout their accomplishments and make sure we know about it. And we're taught more to be like, all right, you know, you do these things, but you're not doing it because you want people to praise you. But I think it's what's more important is not what you say, but what you do. You know, what you say is important because people do hear it, but what you do is even more important. People can say anything, but your actions, like you say, you know, always speak louder than your words.
And I think honestly, Angela, that's why the people who know you really do love you, because you actually walk the walk. Like, you donate, you host the book clubs, you shout other people's projects out. Anytime I've needed something, you've always made time, no matter what else you were doing. Like, sometimes it can be intimidating to come up to someone who's successful, and you really do walk the walk. So we have to shout you out and acknowledge you for that. And for always looking out for the griot, because we're a Black outlet and oftentimes we have to fight twice as hard to get into spaces, and you never forget about us. So we thank you for that.
We appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Anjali, thank you for being a guest on our new podcast, Dear Culture. It was great to have you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jaren Keith Gaynor, the griot's managing editor. In this week's Moment of Clarity, we give you the latest news about coronavirus protests. Over the last several weeks, we've seen protests pop up all over the country, demanding that states lift their restrictions and allow local economies to reopen. Protesters have been calling into question the need for restrictions on business and social distancing guidelines. For many of us adhering very closely to social distancing guidelines, seeing these protests might make you scratch your head. But there's a lot at play here.
Okay, so let's talk about this story. This has probably been one of the biggest stories of the past week. And it really is a tale of two cities when you talk about New York City and the way that residents are being treated in quarantine. But again, it reflects this larger theme of two Americas. Jaren, what are you seeing when you look at these stories?
You know, Natasha, when you look at what's happening in New York and across the country, it's a reminder that we've yet to truly address racism in this country. And so while mostly white people are on the streets demanding that businesses reopen, that the economy reopens, Black people are feeling the brunt of this public health crisis in ways that white people don't necessarily see or experience. And so we see Black people in the streets of Brooklyn, in the streets of Harlem, for example, trying to social distance, and they're seeing the brunt of police brutality. It's really the story of America, racism, that Black people are not afforded the same liberties as white people. When you see white protesters busting into Michigan's Capitol State Building with guns, mind you, and how very differently the Black Panthers were seen when they did the same thing decades ago. And so we're seeing during this coronavirus, white people demanding that their rights be met, that their voices be heard.
That's right. And it's very interesting that, again, as we listen to these protests, we just are seeing division at a time when, you know, this is something in which human beings could be coming together and sort of supporting each other in this very vulnerable moment and shared condition. We're seeing the politicization of this moment. Thanks for tuning into That Moment of Clarity. And now here's the final segment of the show. We're talking entertainment with the Griots Entertainment Director, Courtney Wills. What's up, Courtney? How you doing?
Hey, Courtney.
I'm good. Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're great. It's always good to hear from you, holding it down in LA. So, Courtney, you sat down with actress Simone Missick, who we might remember as Detective Misty Knight from Luke Cage. We love Simone. She's currently starring in a new show called All Rise, where she plays Lola Carmichael, a recently appointed judge and a former prosecutor in the Los Angeles court system. And they kind of made history recently. Courtney, tell us a little bit about how they did that.
So All Rise really rose to the occasion of this quarantine by deciding that they were going to gift their fans with a season finale, despite the circumstances. So they decided to shoot an entire episode remotely. That meant no crew, no hair and makeup, no lighting guys, no sound techs. And they pretty much sat the way you and I are right now and filmed an episode that really made sense and highlighted a lot of different experiences people are having under the stay-at-home order.
That's pretty incredible. I imagine it's a different experience for the fans. Based on what you saw, did you feel like it still was effective?
I think so. I mean, Simone Missick already made history with this show once by being the first Black woman to lead a CBS primetime drama. It's done extraordinarily well. And because of the subject matter of the show, I think they really had, you know, the leeway to be able to pull this off. I mean, did it have all of the bells and whistles of a traditional drama-packed episode? No. But it showed how different people are dealing with the quarantine and raised a lot of questions about some issues that I think are really important to our community. Some of those were how people who are incarcerated are being treated and being dealt with, how the quarantine and the shutdown of the courts have slowed the legal system. People have been arrested, they're waiting to be arraigned, they're waiting to have trials, they can't meet with their attorneys. So I think it gave us a lot of things to think about and threw out some possible solutions too.
Incredible. Well, let's listen to a clip from your interview with actress Simone Missick from All Rise.
That was foolish. I immediately was like, let's do it. And it wasn't until we were actually doing it that I was like, what the hell was I thinking? It was so difficult. When you're on set, obviously, we all appreciate our crew and, you know, the people who work tirelessly, but to try to do their jobs and act at the same time. I think we counted 13 different departments that the actors were all handling.
Oh my gosh.
Outside of acting. Everything from lights and set design to props, wardrobe, hair and makeup, and crafty, you know?
Yeah.
So there were so many times I was calling out for all of them, desperately wanting for them to be in my house helping me get through this.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it was daunting, but at the same time, you know, I recognize the blessing to be working right now.
So in this talk, I learned that Simone Missick is actually married to Dorian Missick, who was featured on this special finale episode of All Rise and also stars in ABC's For Life. The couple is handling quarantine together pretty well, but one thing that they really had to get together to get through was the fact that his mother was diagnosed with COVID-19 two days after production was shut down. She was on a ventilator, she was in the ICU, and she lives in Atlanta, where, you know, was one of the first cities to open back up during this quarantine. So we spoke to Simone about how she feels about people getting back into the swing of things and, you know, some people refusing to wear masks, these ongoing protests. And she had a lot to say about the way that that ordeal changed her perspective on this crisis.
You know, there's so many things that are tied into what's happening with this pandemic.
Yeah.
So many issues that are being highlighted, from differences in healthcare, the way we treat our indigent population,
mm-hmm.
people who are locked up in prisons, people who are awaiting trial and have yet to be convicted but are still in custody and their lives are on the line.
Yeah.
The lack of services, the lack of tests, you know, all of these things are being highlighted. The unemployment rate is skyrocketing. And so, you know, there are a lot of people who I can look at and say some of them are making the best choice with what they have. You know, I could feel a certain way about people choosing to go and get their nails done, but I could also feel like I understand how the person who owns the nail salon doesn't want to lose their livelihood because they have no access to unemployment.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there are a million sides to this issue. Mm-hmm. And because we don't, you know, live in a country with universal health coverage, I was just reading an article about two different stories. A man and a woman both went to the hospital, both had the same treatment of care, both had the same outcome with the coronavirus. They were both on ventilators. They both made it off. They're both recovering. He has no bill. She has thousands of dollars worth of bill.
Yep.
He lives in Italy. She lives in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that that was kind of striking. And I know what story she's referring to. It was a CNN piece where they basically followed two patients, one here and one in Italy, and they had the exact same diagnosis, exact same course of treatment. One had a bill, one didn't. So how is it that the leaders of the free world are the ones who leave it, citizens holding the bag, you know, during a crisis like this? That's certainly something to think about.
And so am I looking at the system that made this have to be a choice for people, make people have to choose between putting food on their table or putting their health at risk? Yes, that's what I'm mad at. I'm mad that in this developed country that we have to ask our citizens to make those choices.
Wow, that was really powerful. So, you know, as I listen to Simone talk, she's basically highlighting what we've been saying throughout the show, which is that people are experiencing this pandemic differently depending on their skin color and where they live.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's very clear that Black people are experiencing a lack of health care, are experiencing disparities in health in general because of the communities that we already live in, environmental issues. And even when you think about what's happening in places like New York, even when you do try to social distance, policing becomes an issue. And there are people being abused and being arrested for not adhering to social distancing when you have a large swath of the country saying, oh, let's open back up the business. Let's end social distancing. And it seems like for Black people, we are always at the short end of the stick, no matter what we do.
That's real. Well, Courtney, thank you so much for highlighting that even in Hollywood, you know, especially in Black Hollywood, we are not immune from dealing with these issues. I think this is like a really important story for us to continue to follow.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure to be part of the conversation.
You can find Courtney's interview with Simone Mystic on thegrio.com. So make sure you check that out.
We want to remind our listeners to support and show love to local Black businesses during this time. The business that we will highlight this week is Lucafit.
Lucafit is an empowering activewear brand that creates with curves in mind. Partially derived from the Zulu word chiluka, meaning to sweat, Lucafit encourages women of all sizes to feel good as they sweat and stay active.
The Grio has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you like your business to be featured, email us at podcast@thegrio.com. That's G-R-I-O. Thanks for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast.
And please email all questions, suggestions, and complaints to podcast@thegrio.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Grio. This episode was executive produced by Natasha S. Alford, Rob Dozier, and Kevin Y. Brown. We'll see you next week.